Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Shirley.
And I'm Jim, and this is Topic Lords, the only place on the internet you can hear topics discussed. Mark, would you like to introduce yourself, or do you have anything to plug?
Sure. My name is Mark. I have been on the show a few times. I'm a neurolinguistics researcher and a nerd of the second highest caliber.
Yeah, you feel like you don't need to hit the top of the hierarchy?
No way. Definitely not. I like to keep something to aspire to. So
yeah.
I like that.
Keep life interesting.
Yeah.
And Shirley, how does this go? Would you, Mark, I just asked you this question. What did I say?
Oh, you asked if I had anything to plug.
Right.
As well, and introduce
as my
yourself.
Introduction.
Right. Shirley, would you like to introduce yourself, or do you have anything to plug?
I'm Shirley, and I've also been on the show a few times. Go back and check out those episodes if you want to know more about me. I work in tech on the internet, and I have nothing to plug, but I'm also a nerd, as many of us are.
You should listen to those episodes. You two are quality guests.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you. The quality show.
Oh, thank you.
It's a very quality show. You asked if I had anything to plug. And while I don't have anything of my own produce to plug, as I sometimes do, I would like to plug some heavy metal albums.
Oh, yeah.
If I may.
Please.
There is an album that just came out a few days ago by a band called Savage Oath. And it is their first full-length record. And it absolutely it rips. It's so good. It's one of the best records I've heard in a long time. Strong recommend. The new Savage Oath LP is absolutely phenomenal. Bit of a super group. It's got members from a bunch of different other bands, which also rip. Get on Metal Archives and figure out what those bands are. Listen to every single one. They're all great.
You said this is Savage Oath, like the synonym for galoot?
No, Savage Oath. Like,
oh,
to swear an oath.
Oh, I like that much less.
Oh, can you hear my clickety clacking when I type?
Nope, thanks to Zoom.
Wow, incredible.
It's magic.
My keyboard is sitting no less than 6 inches away from a Blue Yeti microphone. It is like absolutely...
We just talked about this, Matt.
And it's a mechanical keyboard.
And the microphone is probably on the same surface, right?
It is. It is on the same
surface.
So like,
it should be getting... This should be rumbly as heck.
That's crazy, Zoom. What the fuck? That's like... AI, dude, that makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't know if they have some machine learning stuff going on in there.
They have.
Wait, I'll also plug a non mind thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's heard of this, but there's a book called The Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
yeah, and actually a book that goes before it called The Hobbit.
Lords are topical on this show.
Yes, yes. So. I'm pregnant, by the way, Kelsey Freeze.
Oh, is that this? You're okay with bringing this up on the show?
It's absolutely fine. But I have never read The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit. I just like watched the movies a million times, including the nightmarish animated Hobbit as a child.
You mean the wonderful, heartwarming animated Hobbit? I'm sure.
Well, I actually haven't seen it since I was a child. I just remember like having a love/terrified relationship with it as a kid. So maybe I'd like it more or be less afraid of it now. But anyway, I had this goal where I was like, I can't have my child come into the world where one of their parents hasn't read The Lord of the Rings. This is like a personal thing. And so it's been my goal to finally read it. And man, I don't know if anyone knows about it, but it's just so great.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But more importantly, The Lord of the Rings.
That's what I meant. Yeah. Congratulations on your...
If you haven't actually read the books, take this as your sign to finally do it because it's so delightful, obviously. And maybe give them a reread if you haven't read them in a while.
Do you recommend pregnancy?
If you want to be pregnant, I do.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right.
If you want a child.
Okay.
And you...
It's one of the only ways to do it.
But just objectively, the experience of pregnancy, recommend?
You know, I think I haven't gotten to the like as fun part late that like when I'm not pregnant enough for like the kicks yet, which I think can be very annoying, but can be a little magical and weird. And I'm excited about that. All the imaging is really cool. I love all the science that happens.
Yeah, yeah. There's an app that we used called Wonder Weeks.
I've heard of that app.
Which would tell you like, your child is the size of a Game Boy Advance. Like
They're so weird with the sizes. I have like a few and I check them all to kind of like get comparisons on what they say.
Your child is the size of a mid-sized sedan.
They're so wildly different. They'll be, one will be like, it's big as a micro machine. And then one's like, it's the same week. They're like, it's a navel orange. I'm like, those things are not.
Those are so different in size.
I got one, I think, this last week that was like a hacky sack. I'm like, yeah, but the last one I got was way bigger than a hacky sack. Like,
oh, there's a lot of fluctuation. It's just like
so much fluctuation. Yeah. It's like, I'm gonna take it easy and don't worry about
the,
it.
The one that says your baby's the size of a mid-sized sedan, that's for the blue whale moms.
Right, there, yeah.
On their apps.
Oh, yeah, they got to be on the app. There's a good one that does strange animals. Apparently, the baby is as big as a Philippine tarsier right now, which is like some kind of huge-eyed mammal.
Which apparently is as big as a micro machine.
Oh, you can't see it. Yeah.
Nope. Because it's no, not a human face.
It's not a human face. Okay, well, it's a strange looking creature and it's great.
It's a delightful looking creature.
Yes, and that's how big.
Look at this little guy. Are you kidding me? Look at those eyes. Phenomenal.
Yes.
Can we get one of those instead of a baby? I'm just kidding.
We can get both things.
I want our baby. And we shouldn't have a tarsier. They're probably best left in the wild.
Yes, we'll let them be.
But has anybody tried raising a baby and a human baby and a tarsier are the same in the same time in the same place?
We could try to see if like we can teach the tarsier to be a baby, you know, to like
and the baby to be a tarsier.
And the baby to be a tarsier.
Well, actually, I bet that thing develops way faster, like is on its own way sooner. So maybe it could pick up some good tarsier tricks.
I think we're basically describing the plot of like a 1980s like screwball comedy in which there's like a baby swap and like, whoa, we ended up with a tarsier and our human baby's out in the jungle of the Philippines.
I read a book recently. I mean, in the past few years, and I can't remember the name, which is just as well because this is major spoilers for the book. Where the protagonist just keeps talking about her sister, and like halfway through the book, it turns like who like ran away from home or was like forcibly separated, like when they were both very young, and like halfway through the book, it's revealed that her sister was a chimp, and they were raised together.
Whoa,
fascinating!
Is this nonfiction?
No, this is fiction.
Oh, okay, all
this
right,
this is fiction.
Cool. Because there was some wild shit in the 70s with like people raising animals in there with their family. Shirley just showed me Roar, or told me about Roar, a movie in which a family lived with lions, real actual ones, for I think like what, like a year or something, right?
Probably more. Roar would be a fantastic topic,
yeah,
of its own for this show because it is
with Tippi Hedren,
who they made this movie and they went to Africa and there were like cool lions and then they're like, let's have lions. And they wanted to make this like movie and they eventually had like 150 like lions and big cats and elephants. And then they made this movie over the course of like 11 years and everyone in their family was in it and was also mauled at some point. I think Tippi Hedren was horribly injured in many ways. Her daughter, Melanie Griffith, also a famous actress, was disfigured and had to have reconstructive surgery. Who's the director of Speed, Matt? Why can't I think of his
name? Jan.
Sorry. Jan de Bont was scalped. Like, I think it had a crew of like 140 and almost all of them were injured.
It's just an insane thing that actually happened.
One huge OSHA violation.
Yeah. And it was like, and it was marketed as a comedy. Like it's like supposed to be
a screwball comedy.
Yeah. Screwball comedy. It's supposed to be like hilarious. And it features a lot of depictions of big cats, actual big cats really injuring people.
All of the injuries were like, or like many of them were happened while they were filming and they kept the footage and used it in the movie.
Yeah.
It's just wow.
So fucking yeah. Crazy that it exists. Yeah. It says it's 1981, but yeah, it was in the making for like 10 years. It's completely insane. We downloaded it. I'm so really excited to watch it, but we haven't seen it yet. I'm like scared to watch it, but also.
Yeah, I would be
excited.
Too.
Yeah.
Are we ready for some topics?
Yeah, let's tackle some topics.
some Indiana Jones topics.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to know yet.
Oh, oh, they're not supposed to know yet. No, I didn't know that.
It's okay. We can. All right. This is,
we're ready for some brand new topic.
This turns out to be an Indiana Jones show. Shirley, your topic is Egypt sweater. Yes, you're not allowed to talk about Indiana Jones while explaining this topic.
Okay.
Wait, is the cat out of the bag now?
There's a movie where there's an archaeologist that everybody knows and loves, including all of his students, but we can't say them to say his name. And one of the students is wearing a sweater. go ahead. You do your thing.
So we were rewatching this beloved film, and we like just noticed at the beginning when we can say the names, right?
We're not going to live like this for.
When Indy like comes out of his classroom and he's swarmed by all of his doting students who are just like surrounding him, we notice this incredible sweater that this woman is wearing, and it's like got patterns of like Egyptian figures on it and pyramids, and it's quite detailed. And I certainly have never seen it before, but it's an incredible sweater. I can't get a screen, like an image of the scene, but if you search Indiana Jones,
we'll put it in the show notes.
I can get a screenshot of it. I can just grab it from my version.
Well, this isn't a video podcast, so it won't show up in the.
I mean, you can upload it to the show notes, or
you can go to the Discord.
That's the idea. You can go to the Discord and ask, hey, what's up with this? Actually, you two are in the Discord, so perhaps you will just be asking you left and right.
That'd be fine. I can share the sweater. I wish I knew how to knit because it's incredible. I found the pattern for it.
Do you think this, like, someone recreated the pattern based on like by looking at a frame of the movie?
No, because the pattern is from the 1940s.
Okay. All right.
So the pattern that I found is actually from the 1940s. It's Egyptian Fair Isle jumper from Weldon's. And so I do wonder though, because they could have had the pattern and someone could have made it for the movie fresh, or they could have just, someone could have found it or had it around, but it is timely since it's from the 40s. And I love the idea of this woman maybe being like, I'm an archaeology major. I should wear this like sweater with ancient Egyptian scenes.
Yeah. I want to impress the archaeology professor I have a crush on.
Yeah.
I'm going to get up really like too close to him, like unprofessionally close. And I'm going to he's going to notice me in my Egypt sweater because he loves that, right?
Yeah.
He definitely loves that.
It's also just a very intense.
I mean, I'm blown away by the idea of like the costume designer on Last Crusade being like, all right, like we got like a ton of extras in this scene. You know, there's like 20 extras in the scene. We got to kit all of them up with like, you know, cool 1940s like gear. And it's perfect along so many axes. Like it's like, you know, archaeology and, you know, it's in period and it's like, you know, in the sort of style of someone. And it's just like, I just wish I could have been in the room when that costume designer was like, check it out, everyone. Look at this thing I found, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Like, we're using it. Like it's in.
Yeah. Like any project with so many people working on it has to, like every single one of them is going to have these little moments of like little spikes of success that they've gotten. They probably would love to share.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I could talk to that person. I wish they were on the show.
Like whoever set up the lights, they've got like, oh yeah, I've just placed this light real good just now.
Yeah. And when they watch the movie, they're like, yo, you see that light? I set that light up.
Yeah.
It just hit just right.
I set up the rest of them too, but they weren't as good.
But also you could get the pattern and recreate this sweater if you had the skills.
Yeah. I feel like the audience for Indiana Jones content is kind of aging out of pop culture now, which is why like Dial of Destiny didn't do so great, apparently. Yeah.
Well, I think another element of why Dial of Destiny didn't do so well is because It's dog shit.
Okay,
that might have actually been part of it. Is
that might be that might be an issue too.
Is that it's a really poor film.
We did attempt to watch it, but we couldn't make it.
You didn't see that the absolutely incredible ending. incredible in the sense of straining credulity.
The wind up was just unwatchable. We just literally couldn't. It was so
I remember you sitting through Crystal Skull.
I did.
An entirely tolerable movie, according to Mark Circa, whenever that movie came out.
Yeah. I think I didn't have strong opinions about it. I think I was just kind of like, eh. I guess that sucked, but it didn't like piss me off the way that this new one did.
That's fair.
Actually pissed me off watching it. I think that Crystal Skull had that effect on a lot of people, but it didn't piss me off. Right. I was just kind of like, eh, whatever, that's weak, you know. But this one was like, I just felt like it got so many things all wrong, you know. Like, they deploy the Indiana Jones theme so early in the film in a situation where it just doesn't make any sense for that music to be playing. It's like nighttime and they're having a kind of a tense, you know, on the roof of a moving train. And I feel like that's an opportunity to be doing some like bum, 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 bum type, you know, music. And instead it's like, bah, 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 bah. And I'm just like, what are we doing here?
He's running and jumping though. Like that's action music.
But nighttime, you know, tense nighttime. That's like, in Last Crusade, he's swinging between the building when he's about to rescue his dad, right?
When he
gets to the castle. That's the vibe. Is like, we're doing some nighttime shit. I feel like if they deployed the full fucking Indiana Jones theme, anytime Indy's like having a punch up with some dudes, we'd be listening to that song the entire film, which we're not.
It is a very punch up heavy like series. Yes.
Yeah. A judicious hand is required when deploying the main Indy theme. It's like there's only like probably like maybe one or two moments where that theme is going to come really swelling up. It should be an emotional peak of the film that takes place probably in the last act. And for it to appear in the first like 5 minutes of that film, I was like, this is all wrong. I know that seems very nitpicky, but I think it is all wrong.
Well, that's fair.
They didn't earn it.
I feel like it wasn't earned. Yeah.
I'm glad to have your opinion.
Thank you.
Oh, but my point was, I'm a little bit surprised no one is like there's the pattern is on Etsy, but I'm surprised nobody's like selling the sweater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've looked and there's like an old, like, oop, it's been sold already listing, and I can't find it anywhere just for sale. I guess you could probably like hire someone and be like, could I please pay you?
Yeah, you could just
knit this for me.
You could go to fiverr.com and I'd pay somebody $5.
Yeah, $500 probably.
I mean, if you want to give them the value of their labor, yes. That's not what Fiverr is about, though.
Oh, right.
Fiverr is about exploitation.
No, oh, that's sad.
I think that maybe also this sweater is too niche. I think it's like not been noticed.
Yeah, you think that like no, you wouldn't wear this to a Halloween party and everybody would be like, oh, it's the woman who was in this opening scene of Last Crusade.
This would actually be a classic move for me to like wear a costume no one knows what it is, but it's like incredibly accurate and detailed.
Right.
Yeah.
That's like certainly a move I have done since I was a child. So this is absolutely something I would do, but I do think no one would know. Like, I can't even look for this and find a screenshot from the movie. And I know Mark's looking for one or is going to just get one from the movie, but like, it's not that there's not even a screenshot of this scene anywhere.
Right.
So I think that it is largely unknown, largely unnoticed.
You know what I would do if I was going to have someone make this thing for me is I would be like, I want this sweater, but I want you to sneak in like a depiction of the Ark of the Covenant on the sweater.
Yeah, and a UFO and
one of the little figures is like Indy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That yeah, I'd be okay.
I mean,
that.
One of them has a lightsaber, so
I see that actually.
Yeah, that is kind of insane.
Are we ready for another topic?
Yeah.
Mark, your topic is, at the end of this film, are we supposed to want Indy to save Elsa to go off happily together?
Yeah. It's interesting. On this rewatch, I've watched this film many times. We rewatched it in advance of this episode. Felt like, from just the storytelling, that we are supposed to feel like there's chemistry between Indy and Elsa, right? Like there is chemistry between them, obviously.
At least the first, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's like we get a little bait and switch, obviously, big twist. Elsa's a Nazi. And then we're mad at Elsa. This isn't like an explicit thing, but then I feel like there's a turn and we're supposed to start feeling sympathetically towards her again. She's at the book burning, you know, and she's like, oh, I don't agree with this. You know, like, I believe in the Grail. And he's all like, you stood up to be counted with everything, the Grail, etc. And so he's mad at her. But I feel like we keep having these emotionally elevated moments between Indy and Elsa. And I think that's supposed to be chemistry. I think the filmmakers are trying to be like, no, but don't you still want them to be together, actually, even though she's a Nazi? I got that impression.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand how relationships work in real life or in movies. So,
yeah.
A puzzle.
Yeah. I do know that, for example, you are more likely to like feel strongly attracted to somebody like shortly after some unrelated, strongly emotional event.
Mm, yeah.
I'm going to tell this story, even though I don't remember the actual circumstances of the story. I think I was talking to a taxi driver who was driving a couple. They had done the tourist thing on the Golden Gate Bridge. And apparently the husband had proposed, or not the husband, but the boyfriend had proposed to the girlfriend on the bridge. And I'm wondering if he did this on purpose, to take advantage of the heightened emotion of like being high up.
Mm. Ooh.
Mm.
And it didn't work. But
oh, she said no.
It could have worked out, you know.
Dang.
Sure could have, but
I could see it. I could see it being a thing.
Yeah.
I think that like there were probably a lot of people in Nazi circles who had mixed feelings or were unhappy with how things were going and went along because it was the easiest thing to do or the safest thing to do.
I'm sure that's true, but you didn't end up being right hand to a high ranking SS officer. You know what I mean? Like getting in there, doing the double agent shit. If you weren't like feeling it, I don't think that's like a
she
like
reveals a, later that she basically, like, she just kind of wants to get to the Grail. She like is sort of using them to get what she wants, which I want to be clear, does not excuse her. She's a Nazi. She can,
yeah.
She's the worst.
She's an archaeologist. Like you're saying that her like love for archaeology was greater than her love for Nazism.
Yeah. Yeah. That she was, I think, primarily there for the Grail, that she like thought she could get to the Grail and perhaps the other artifacts that she was into, and, you know, was pained at the book burning, as you said.
Well, she said she would.
Yes. But I mean, I don't actually think they wanted us to want them to be together.
Really? Because then at the end, Indy's trying to save her. Indy's down there. He's in the hole. He's got his hand. He's holding on to her. You know, Elsa, give me your other hand, honey. I can't hold you. I don't know, man. That feels
very. Does he say honey?
He does. He does say honey. Yes.
Oh, wow.
He says, Elsa, give me your other hand, honey. I can't hold you. She says, I can almost reach it. And then this exact same scenario plays out between him and his father, two people who do love each other.
Does he call his father honey?
He does not, but his father calls him Junior.
Junior, yeah.
Actually, his father calls him Indiana, crucially.
It was both. That was the
He says, Junior, give me your other hand. And then he says, Indiana. And that's like the big moment where it's, yeah, like, holy, like, oh, wow, he's using the name.
This is a character arc right here. That's it, the is payoff of the arc.
It is. It 100% is. Yes. It's the heart of the film.
Though I want to point out that Elsa did fall to her death in that moment, not because, you know, like Indy's feelings weren't like good enough or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, that maybe there, if there's any symbolism there, like that doesn't work out.
Well, no.
Yeah, I agree. But I think the use of the word honey, probably deliberate on the part of the screenwriter, as like, yeah, they're still in the relationship right now. They're still, yeah, like in that mode of thinking.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I think he just didn't want a person to die.
But you don't just call random people honey.
I would say that except for the word honey. That's what I would, that's my thinking there. one topic that we did not choose, but I think is a good one, and we could do a little mini topic here, was Elsa choosing the wrong grail on purpose.
Yes.
A few minutes earlier in the film. I'm constantly like, are we just going to assume everybody who's listening to the show has seen this movie, or do we have to explain every scene? I guess we probably do. So Elsa has an opportunity that she takes as sort of a mini redemption moment, which is that the Nazi she's working with or for asks her to choose the grail for him, and then he drinks from it and dies.
Horribly.
Horribly, yes.
Yeah, and I had never caught, and Shelley pointed this out to me on this rewatch, and I want to stress, I've watched this movie like probably 100 times, and I have never noticed, and it's embarrassing, but I had never noticed that when he's like, I don't know what it looks like. He doesn't ask her to choose. She says, let me choose.
Oh, sure.
So she actually volunteers the choice for him. And then she goes over and picks one. And then in a manner that almost is like hidden from the audience, because the focus is on Donovan. He turns to face the camera holding the false grail. And in the background, legitimately a little out of focus, you can see Elsa look over at Indy and like shake her head. Like, so it is like explicit in the film that she is 100% murdering that dude, right? Like, she's absolutely intentionally giving that dude the wrong grail. That's something I never noticed.
He also should have been more suspicious, because to be honest, she picks like the first one in front of her without looking at all of them at all. She like hasn't even seen all of them, and she's just like, this one, it's this one. And he's like, of course it is.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude,
there's like 50 grails on the other side of the room you didn't even look at.
Even go near.
That might just be movie magic. That might be like how when Marty McFly asks for a cup of coffee, the guy running the cafe just pulls a finished cup of coffee out from behind under the counter, like in less than a second.
Yeah, he just has it ready to go under there.
That's fair. That's fair. Or maybe he's just so caught up in the moment he isn't thinking about it. But it's more likely some coffee cup magic.
Just sort of movie like the expeditious nature of storytelling in a film.
Right.
You can't have her be like, hang on a second, we got to take an inventory here.
There could be a montage. Yeah.
Yes, a little. Yeah. Or a little pan.
They're like taking notes. They're like,
yeah, they got what about the this jeweler's one? Loop out. Yeah.
Dude, honestly, I would want someone to get the jeweler's loop out if it was a life or death.
Absolutely. Yeah.
A sip of water.
That would be a different movie, but I would watch that other movie. That'd be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get out all the tools and some books. And it's a pretty hasty move. But I do think that her doing that, maybe it does lead into that element later where he's trying to save her, you know, that there is a little bit more of like softened feelings maybe between them.
Yeah. I mean, she does get a little miniature redemption. And, you know, I guess it's not like as far as we know in the film, she hasn't personally done anything truly heinous. She's mostly evil by association. She did betray Henry and got him kidnapped, which is pretty bad. And she also betrayed Indy and got the book, it stole the book from him, also pretty bad. But neither of those things are like full war crime atrocities. She's just like by association was like, yeah, I'm totally cool to be kicking it with a bunch of Nazis, you know,
and helping them.
This is how I get the grail.
Yeah, this is how I get the grail. Pretty bad. Pretty serious bad guy stuff. I mean, it's not like, you know, unredeemable bad guy stuff. But then just getting Donovan killed to me is not sufficient redemption. No. to be like, we're cool now. Like, we're not cool. Like, I do appreciate that you got Donovan killed, but like, we're not actually cool.
I think you kind of pity her in the end, or at least I do. I'm like,
oh, definitely. Yeah.
I'm like, wow, she just doesn't have sight of reality or what's important in life and is totally, you know, lost in this obsession.
I guess that's the takeaway for her character is lost in the obsession, has lost track of priorities.
Well, and then it's like completely that same thing is immediately shown with Indy and his dad seconds later.
Yeah, the priorities there.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. God,
are we ready for another topic?
Sure. Yeah.
My topic is Kazim is the best character in Last Crusade. This was the topic that made me like when I just rewatched this movie with my wife, and I was like, I need to talk about Kazim with Mark and Shirley.
Yes. Oh, I'm honored.
I sent you guys like, hey, can we, you should come on Topic Lords with me to talk about Last Crusade, which you took to mean like nothing but, and then came back at me with like, here are 1,000 Last Crusade topics. And I was like, oh, I guess we're doing this.
We were like, we could talk about the Last Crusade. Absolutely.
We can go right now.
Kazim, for the listener, he's a member of the Brotherhood of the Cruciform Sword, who have sworn to protect the Grail for the past 1,000 years. Apparently there's this secret society that's just been hanging out, waiting for people to get close enough to the Grail to be like, this one might happen. This guy might actually go for it. And then they go come and like kill you.
Which is such a cool hook. It's like such a good story beat. Like they have this like conflict with him, this whole insane like boat chase conflict where Indy almost dies and like all this crazy shit. And then at the end of which he like learns all of what you just said, and Kazim just like fucking chirps out. He knows where the Grail is.
Oh yeah,
you know, like Kazim knows. Like he could just tell Indy. He knows everything. He knows where Henry is. Like he knows the whole story. Like,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I think the exchange is that Indy says that I'm not looking for the Grail. I'm looking for my father. And Kazim says, in that case, God be with you on your quest. And then tells him where he is.
Yeah.
And then like walks into the background and like right at the end of the shot, it looks like he falls down off of something. Like
oh my God.
It's very strange.
Oh, you have to see that again.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
That's all right, amazing.
Look, time to pause while we look this up on YouTube.
You know what I do sometimes? I'm going to see if this works. Is I just type the line from the movie into YouTube and just see if it gives me the scene.
Ooh,
there's a YouTube video in my search results called "My Soul Is Prepared."
Ooh, that's good.
That is such a good moment.
It's very good. Yeah.
So I typed, "Your father is being held at the Castle Brunwald on the Austrian border," and I got the escape from Castle Brunwald.
Right. So the name of the video is "Kazim Falls Off Dock, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade."
Oh my God.
Oh my God. He just drops right off.
He drops right out of the shot.
There's a little pad below him or something because the dock ended, or they built a fake dock maybe.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. They must've built a fake dock and maybe it just didn't actually go anywhere. And so they needed him to like keep walking, but there was nowhere to walk. So he just had to like to drop off the end of the dock.
And you're like, all right, just walk real smooth and don't brace for the drop. Just do it. Amazing.
That is crazy.
I would love to see the other side of that.
So the tragedy of this guy is that he didn't get a spinoff TV series.
Yeah.
Because he absolutely, like, I would have, this is appointment television. You tune in every Friday night or whatever to watch this guy. You know, there's a kid like looking up Grail information in the library, in the school library. And he just shows up to beat the shit out of him. Like, like every episode, some different person from some all walks of life is like getting too close.
And so the Brotherhood of the Cruciform Sword like descend on their house and just absolutely wreck their shit.
I think it has to be Kazim because like he stands in for the whole Brotherhood.
Right.
Like there's a couple other guys. They're like schlubby guys that are clearly extras in the boat.
Yeah.
Yes.
But they're not the cool ones.
Well, the Brotherhood lays siege to that whole Nazi battalion towards the end of the film.
That's true. There's a bunch more of them.
That's the Brotherhood coming after those guys, and they do pretty good. I mean, they do get kind of wrecked, but they do kill a bunch of Nazis.
Yeah, they had to get wrecked to give him a tragic death, like a sacrificial.
Yeah.
Though also pretty dope because he's just like, dude, I was ready to die this whole time.
Yeah.
And like I'm serving my purpose right now.
Yeah. Sacred duty.
And so he's like, I'm cool. Like I like set out to do this thing and I perished doing it.
Yeah.
So there was an episode. Do you guys remember the TV show MacGyver?
Yeah.
Yes.
There was a two-part episode of MacGyver that came out the same year as Last Crusade. That was about MacGyver looking for the Holy Grail.
What?
And this definitely would have been a crossover episode.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God.
Brotherhood show. They show up MacGyver gets the shit beat out of him. and then they all go to a bar together, maybe.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, just don't look for the fucking grail.
he didn't want the grail. He just wanted to duct tape it to something.
That's right. He wanted to find some other use for it. But yeah, this character is amazing. It's like interesting because all, like you said, all the extras like die without really any fanfare at all. And it's one of those interesting moments in a movie where like he's having this fight with these people only to like be homies with this guy moments later. And it's like, oh man, I guess maybe all those people like didn't need to die at all.
Yeah,
like like they really didn't need to die or have this crazy.
Did those other guys die in the boat chase? Did anybody die?
Yeah, they got squeezed between the two big boats.
Oh yeah, they sure did.
There were like two boats in there too. They exploded. Yeah,
they got blowed up. Yeah, they definitely. True.
I think one might have gotten like propellered, but it's unclear if that occurred.
I don't think anybody got propellered. I think just Indy and Custom were about to get propellered, but then they. My soul's prepared. How's yours?
That's pretty good, actually. That's a pretty good impression.
Thank you. Dr. Jones. Yeah, he says Dr. Jones. My soul's prepared, Dr. Jones. Yeah, good shit.
But yeah, really weird that it's like they could have all been homies.
Yeah, it's sad.
Bad timing. Gosm needs like a system.
Yeah.
Better system in advance. It's like, are you really looking like, does someone need to die or could we talk for a minute and then, you know, we kill you if we need to.
You know, what's interesting is that Kasim and Indy are almost like oppositional force. I mean, they're definitely oppositional at the beginning when they're fighting each other, but even once they're homies, they're really like kind of opposed. Like if you think about it, like Indy's whole deal is that he goes and like finds artifacts and like steals them.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then puts them in a museum because he's like, artifacts belong in museums.
Yes. And not with the people who they originate with. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I should go to a cave in wherever where like the Hovatos people have a relic and I'm going to steal it. And then I'm going to put it in a museum where those people don't get to see it anymore. Right. It's kind of Indy's like thing. Kasim is like, I'm protecting the artifact. It stays where it is right now. You know? So it's interesting that the two of them, like they're both artifact guys, you know, but Indy is a thief basically. And Kasim is like a protector. It's sort of cool.
Yeah, I had this idea. This was obviously this is a game idea because that's my medium. But I think it might work better as a movie. The idea of like, you know, 100 years later, Indiana Jones's descendant, like one of them becomes like they go on a series of heists to steal artifacts back from museums and return them to their people.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, that's the content we need. That's
That sounds great.
Way better.
Sounds awesome.
I would love that.
Are we ready for another topic?
Yeah,
sure.
For this topic, we're going to be reading this poem, Portrait of My Brother as Indiana Jones by Amarok Huey, I think is how you pronounce that. Who would like to read this poem?
Ooh.
I'll read a poem. Did I read a poem last time?
I don't remember if you read a poem last time. It's okay if you're going to get typecast as the one who reads a poem. That's not that bad, actually.
Yeah, it's okay.
That's nice.
Okay, here we go. All right. Portrait of My Brother as Indiana Jones by Amarok Huey. Barbed wire fence, pasture, stand of water oaks. This was the path to the river, sometimes chased, sometimes chasing, always moving fast, sometimes an enormous rolling rock, sometimes a hail of spears and arrows, afraid of nothing more than standing still. All a young man has is his faith in hard work, the belief that if only he can count the grains of sand in a fist-sized sack, things will turn out as he hopes, that when he returns home, there will be a quiet afternoons and a girl in a sweater with love on her eyelids. Yet every adventure ends in the same weary surprise, the same aching temples, when the poison darts fly, when the floor drops from beneath, when fatherhood looms and the bills come due, when vision closes in the corners, when the dark mass requires surgery, when they cut open his skull, the only threats that matter were inside. Dang, surprisingly heavy. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's good.
It's really good.
Yeah, quite good. Good job, Amarok.
His brother had a rough life getting all the arrows and spears.
And then brain surgery.
And brain surgery later.
Brain tumor. Yeah, brain cancer or whatever. Insane. Wow. Threats that matter were side. All. That's great. Beautiful.
Like the poison darts in his temples.
Yeah. Yeah, right?
Yeah, I really like that.
Who is this guy, Amarok Huey?
Yeah, it's neat to find an Indiana Jones themed poem out there. This idea is really cool. And, you know, we all watch movies and especially as kids then have these ideas of what our challenges might be in life.
Yeah, it's Amarok Huey.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. He's from Kalamazoo.
He's got his own name at Twitter. That's pretty good.
Yeah, good.
His chat book, The Insomniac Circus, is forthcoming from Hyacinth Girl Press.
Great. Well, keep an eye out for that, listener.
Cool. That's some good content.
Yeah, I love that. Great poem.
The phrase, love on her eyelids, if you hadn't seen that movie, that would be very, like, it would sound metaphorical.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is really funny that it is
literal.
literal. It is literally an Indiana Jones movie reference.
Yes.
It's awesome. Yeah, you're right. If you I was just like, yeah, she had love in her eyelids, literally. But yeah, if you hadn't seen the film, that's like such beautiful language, actually.
Yeah. Are we ready for another topic?
Sure. Yeah. I was just pondering this dope
poem. I'm just kind of rereading parts of it, man.
Mark, your topic is Sala, the hardest brown face to swallow.
Yes. This is something I really only thought of on maybe on rewatches of this film in the last few years as a certified wokist. You know, I'm over here.
Wait. Is that a portmanteau of woke and locust?
Oh my God.
Yes, I'm an insectoid who is also very aware of social issues.
Okay. All right.
No, I just, you know, I'm out here trying to do right by all kinds of different folk. And, you know, had this movie been made today, I think I probably would prefer that Sala be played by an Egyptian person, but it's just one of those things like, and I want to stress, I'm not over here just like burning Indiana Jones and being like, oh, Indiana Jones is canceled and we can't watch it anymore. Like, that's not what I'm getting after. It's more
two things can be true.
Yeah. It's more like a blemish on the film. It's something I thought about while I was watching it that I was like, oh, Sala, I love this character. So great. Such a crucial part of the franchise. Saves Indy several times, you know, shows up in the pinch. He's always ready, you know, like to help, you know, saves Marcus Brody. Well, he delivers Marcus Brody to the Nazis by accident, but he tries to save Marcus Brody. And he, you know, shows up with the car. He shows up with the horses. He shows up with the camels. He's like, there. Yeah, but compensation for my brother-in-law's car. And I just love him so much. And I love John Rhys-Davies' performance as Sala so much. He's so good. And in the first one as well, you know, Bad Dates. He's such a great character. I actually like him. Tell you the truth, I like him a lot more in Raiders. And I know this is not a Raiders podcast, but
okay.
But I do like him.
We can have a digression.
Yeah, I do like him a lot more in Raiders because I think he's treated with a little bit more respect in Raiders. Like he's like a foreman and, you know, like an architect, and he's kind of a like an engineer. Like he's sort of more like what, and like his family, you know,
he's a little less hijinks based.
He's like, a little less hijinks. Yeah,
he's more rooted in reality, and you see his other skills, not just
and
as
he's
like
less
a fixer.
Of comic relief. Yeah, he's kind of mostly comic relief in the last film, Last Crusade, but I still love him very much. And I was just thinking about it, you know, that it's like hard pill to swallow, right? Him and that dude in Short Circuit. That's,
right. Yep. I forget his name, but yes,
Fisher Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was another one. That's that actually is a, maybe a hardest pill to swallow because I legit don't know if I can watch that movie anymore. Like it's actually super hard to, like, I don't know if you've revisited Short Circuit, but
I'm not, but I know I get it. Yeah.
It's a tough hang. I mean, in fairness to Fisher Stevens, and actually to his immense credit, he really did do his best after having the rug pulled out from under him on that job. So he actually signed up to be a doctoral student like a white doctoral student. Like that was the part that he auditioned for, and that was the part he got. And then like kind of at the last second after he'd been cast in the role, they were like, "Ooh, actually it's going to be like an Indian dude. Like, can you do Indian?" And he was actually pretty uncomfortable with it, but he was also like, "This is like my big break and I can't like not take this major movie, you know?"
Yes, yeah, like, a very Elsa figure. Yeah. In this situation.
Yeah. Kind of meta Elsa, because it's actually the actor. but yeah, so then, and then he, I read that he actually like went to India and he, you know, did his homework and he tried to do a version of an Indian guy that wasn't going to be, you know, just a joke. But, you know, the script, that character is played for laughs. It just is.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's no getting around it. That's that is a character who has a funny accent, and we're supposed to find that very, very funny. It's tough. It's a tough look. So maybe that's a harder brown face than Sala.
Well, except that I would say that character is not nearly as beloved as Sala is.
That's certainly.
Which is what makes it hard for me. Like I can give up Short Circuit. That's not a problem for me.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I liked that movie, but you know, haven't seen it in a while. I don't need to see it again.
Yeah,
I'm fine.
Also, and again, no, this is not an attack on my guy Fisher, but John is like 10 times the actor that Fisher Stevens is. So, you know, it's also just an easier watch because he's just better at his job. And also it's not played for laughs as much. I think in Last Crusade, Sala is played for laughs more than in the other one. The sort of
I feel like in Last Crusade is much more of a like a Looney Tunes movie.
Yes,
in many respects than Raiders it was.
Mm, yeah, it does have some. Just set out across the desert this morning. I believe they took Mr. Brody with them. It's incredible.
But yeah, it's hard because he's in our hearts, Sala.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. Yeah, and then like later in his career, he plays a dwarf, not actually a dwarf.
Yeah,
not actually a dwarf.
Yeah,
that's right. Lord of the Rings canceled.
Yeah,
that's it.
It's Throw a pattern it of behavior, you know.
Yeah, yeah. He's not really from Middle Earth. It's just appropriation.
I just wanted to bring up since we were talking about Middle Earth. I read recently that in the canonical Middle Earth lore, the world is flat for elves, but it's round for everybody else.
What?
What on earth?
What? How is that possible?
According to this, the world was originally flat with most of the land in the middle, hence Middle Earth. But the Numenoreans tried to invade the uttermost west, which was basically elf heaven. To put an end to that sort of thing, the creator of the world bent the world and made it a sphere, but left elves able to treat it like a flat disc, so elves can sail west and reach elf heaven. Whoa. But man or dwarf or hobbit who sails west will wrap around to the east coast of Middle Earth.
Okay, that's actually kind of awesome.
That is kind of awesome, but what about Bilbo, who...
Well, he's with them,
so it counts. It's okay.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah.
He's on an elf ship. It is able to carry them.
Yeah, I wonder if that's just like, if you had too many hobbits on the ship, then they would all die.
And like, when does it become a hobbit ship versus an elf ship?
Yeah, yeah. It's probably who owns it. Probably who has the
who
deed.
Who has the deed, yeah.
Yeah. Are we ready for another topic?
Sure.
Shirley, your topic is, are pits of snakes effective as circus attractions?
Okay. So the beginning of the movie, there's that incredible scene on the train where they're like in this chase and they're going through all the various cars of this like circus train. And Indy has his like disturbing encounter with snakes that, you know, changes him forever. And there's just
like every single character trait of Indy's is explained in these 15 minutes.
Exactly. Yes. They all happen. His scar happens there.
Very formative time for young Indy.
The whip, the hat. Yeah, it all happens here. And at that point, there's like a whole car that's like reptiles and snakes. And there are many, many vats filled with snakes, like a whole vat filled with like garter snakes. And it's so many of them. They're all just writhing in a huge deep pile in many different containers.
There's also a tank with water that has some kind of water snake in it.
Yes. Yeah. But, and I mean, honestly, that one I can see more as a circus attraction, but what about these many,
are you thinking like a traveling SeaWorld sort of a situation?
that'd be fine. They set up a tank and it's a huge snake in there. Yeah. Like that would be, circuses were often like spectacle, right?
Yeah.
But like, is really like a huge vat of like little garter snakes, like
big pile of undifferentiated snakes. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just in a pile.
The ones at the bottom are dead. Clearly.
I think that would be a very good attraction with accompanied by a guy who lays down in the bed of snakes. Yeah. For sure. Just like Indy, right? He's like laying in the thing and they just start dumping snakes on top of him until he's just completely covered in snakes. And the people, this is like the 1940s, or actually this is probably like the 1910s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tens or twenties. Yeah. Maybe tens. And you know, like the people that this circus are going to go see, man, they don't know what those snakes are. Well, actually maybe they would know what a garter snake was because they live in the country. Hard to say, but they could probably be like, these are deadly poisonous snakes, you know?
Right.
And that would be thrilling.
Yeah. So I just did a search for circus attraction, guy who lies in snakes. Okay. And there's nothing. So like this,
what?
This hypothetical that you're posing, I'm sorry.
Well, also we don't have a lot of animal circus attractions anymore, you know?
Right. Yeah. And for good reason.
But in 2019, a circus performer was strangled to death by the snake. He was
right. That's the only thing that came up, like repeat, like
saw that many times,
20 copies of that headline was what came up when I searched for guy who lies in snakes.
Right.
One of the main things is if it's like some big snake, I'm fine. Absolutely. That's a circus act. Completely. Of course. Britney Spears did it. and many, many more will.
Britney Spears didn't do the thing with 1,000 garter snakes.
Yeah, this is the thing, is like a pit of 1,000 garter snakes. I'm wondering about that particular situation being like, whoa, look at all these fucking snakes. I mean, maybe that was enough, honestly, just to be like, this is a lot of, I've never seen so many snakes. I don't know. It seems a strange attraction for the circus.
Yeah, like maybe they were like putting on a performance of the play that Snakes on a Plane was based on. They just needed a bunch of snakes.
Yeah, I mean, and they're not even dangerous snakes in this instance.
Right.
They're little garter snakes, the best snakes.
Maybe most adorable snakes.
Maybe it's an educational circus, and they have, it's like a little petting zoo situation where they invite kids to come and handle some snakes to show them that snakes are actually our friends.
Yeah, but you could do that with like two snakes.
What if you got a lot of kids, you know?
Maybe it's like when you win a goldfish at like the fair, maybe it's like everyone could take away a little
snake. You take your own snake home? Yeah.
Yeah, your parents love it.
Your parents definitely love that.
They love it. You bring home a little garter snake.
If they don't like it, you can just set them loose in the backyard because it's the Midwest.
And it's fine. Yes. Yeah, so I'm suspicious of the presence of those snakes. To be clear, I understand it's a movie, but.
Yeah, no, but this conversation is all in good fun.
Yes, and I will always wonder every time I see it, I'll be like, why are there so many?
Yeah, I do think that it's fair to say that like a movie, if like some people would say that if you don't think about the you don't think to ask the question until after the movie's over, then it's fair storytelling. But I think definitely if you don't think to ask the movie for like 30 years, ask the question for like 30 years after you first see the movie, pretty fair storytelling.
Yeah.
Yes. I think I have always kind of wondered a little bit, but I don't.
Okay. All right.
But I don't mind it. Really, it's still good in good fun in the movie. And we, you know, I wouldn't want River Phoenix to have had to be submerged in any dangerous snakes. So,
yeah. And
they,
also,
they did what worked for them.
As we've already established, it's okay to like something that's flawed.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's true. Also, quick River Phoenix appreciation moment. Incredible performance as young Indy.
Yeah, he did a great job.
He's great.
I liked him a lot in Sneakers.
Yeah, he's great in Sneakers. Yeah, absolutely. Dude, he's great. He was such a great actor. What a great loss. Every time I see a movie with him in it, I always wonder, like, man, what kind of cool stuff would that guy be working on if he was still alive?
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
If only.
Very sad.
He what was an OD, right? He died from a recreational drug situation.
I believe that is correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's super sad. I think he was like at a club with his brother. Yeah.
Yeah, but he was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he was phenomenal. Great actor.
We have time for one more topic. My topic, and this isn't really my topic. I kind of yoinked it from you guys because I only had the one.
That's fine.
But I'm happy to lead the conversation about this. The visual of them closing themselves in a giant box while on the motorcycle. So there's a scene where Indy and his dad are fleeing a castle full of Nazis. They're being chased, like they're being chased down the stairs. Like I think we get a shot of like, of Indy like starting a boat and then pointedly not getting in it. And yes. Then it cuts to Nazis running down the stairs and they come down the stairs and they get in the boat to chase them. At which point Indy and his dad, like they burst out of a box riding a motorcycle with a sidecar. Am I remembering this right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a situation where like with almost no time to prepare, they set up this Looney Tunes surprise scenario. None of the, like, first of all, they had to open the box. It's probably nailed shut or at least sealed somehow. So like,
right.
And like they had to open the box to see what was in there. Cause they wouldn't know it was a motorcycle because neither of them reads German.
Right.
Indy speaks 1,000 languages, but not German. And then they have to nail the box shut behind them or at least make it look closed in order to like get no advantage in the chase whatsoever. Cause they like, they blow right past they play, it's played for laughs and not for advantage. The advantage would be like waiting until they were out of sight.
Yeah.
And then escape from them on the motorcycle from there.
They don't wait at all. They haven't been made either. They're safely ensconced in the box.
Yeah.
This enormous box.
They do knock a few Nazis into the water. And I guess
hilarious.
Uh-huh. Hilarious. Very funny. And I think those dudes probably wouldn't be able to chase them. But yeah, they definitely would have been better served waiting, you know, a few minutes later for the Nazis, or at least like 30 seconds later for the Nazis to be far enough away, like to have at least left the dock. You'd
like have to turn the boat around, you know?
Right. Yeah. They don't even have to turn the boat around. They just have to jump back off the boat.
I just right, love yeah. picturing them working it out. The plan, because they only have seconds. They only have seconds to do this. And it's like, okay, what's here? It's a giant box. What's in the box? It's a convenient motorcycle with a sidecar. Okay, get in the sidecar. It's so funny too, because Indy and his dad can't do anything quickly. Like Henry Sr. like argues and questions Indy's choices constantly. But imagining them crawling into the box and like pulling the giant board back up while on a motorcycle.
Yeah. Yep.
It's and incredible.
Just for that 30 seconds in the movie, they're not bickering so that the Nazis don't hear them.
Yes, absolutely. They can find a way to keep perfectly quiet.
So have you guys played the Batman Arkham Asylum games, any of those games in that series?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like I one of the things that you do in that game is you spend a lot of time like sneaking from hiding place to hiding place and doing like a stealth takedown of a dude yes. who's walking by. In the movie, that scene would be played from the perspective of the person who's being beaten up, who's being like surprised, because it's more dramatic that way. But like in the game, they make you like actually do the whole like rigmarole of like, okay, you're going to go hide behind this curtain. You're going to wait for half an hour for what's his face to come back into his office. You can surprise him. Like, I feel like all the characters that where their whole thing is that they're extremely prepared for a situation, showing the preparation isn't good storytelling for a number of reasons. And I always, almost always find it entertaining to imagine like we could have watched that movie.
Yeah.
We could have like, he's hanging out. He's like, he's playing a crossword on his phone while he waits for the guy to come back. You know, he's scrolling Reddit.
Yeah.
It's like going to take a long time. That's such a good comparison. Yeah, that like playing a character that has to sneak and painstakingly prepare and wait. And if you mess it up and didn't get behind the curtain well enough.
Right.
Then maybe you have to do it all again and wait another 30 minutes.
You can see your bat feet.
Yes, your little bat feet sticking out from under the curtain.
Aw.
Aw. Oh, no. Not again. But yeah, the idea of watching the preparation is fully hilarious.
And it works because the movie plays it completely straight. Like, of course that's what they did. That's what they do. And of course it worked because you just saw it work.
Yeah,
absolutely. There's your proof right there.
Yeah.
That's all the time we have for Topic Lords. Mark, if this is something that you want, where can people find you on the internet?
They can't. Ha!
Ah. And Shirley, if this is something that you want, where can people find you on the internet?
They also cannot, but I hope they have a lovely and safe time on the internet.
Me too. ABS. Always be safe.
Always be safe.
OTI on the internet.
On the internet.
Yeah. You know, always be careful Googling stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Because you might see something you don't want to see, especially when you're Googling your own medical symptoms. Definitely, you know. You really want to exercise caution. You know,
a lot of pitfalls.
A lot of pitfalls. Probably better, honestly, just talk to your doctor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's going to be a more rewarding experience, is my guess.
And the doctor's like, hey, did you try Googling your symptoms?
Yeah,
because they would have told you you're fine.
Yeah, doctors love it if you come to them with just like a full diagnostic breakdown of like, you know, what you think your illness is as a result of your
you'd Googling. Think like they're super pressed for time. You'd think they'd be appreciative.
I think that's getting better, actually. I think that's improving with time.
I hope so.
It's been well received. If I do it carefully.
Okay.
with respect. I think if I'm like, You're obviously the professional, so tell me your take
right.
on this.
Yeah, if you frame it the right way.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for being on.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, always. Yeah,
good chat.
Hi, this is Jim. This is the audio I append to every episode of Topic Lords. Congratulations to our newly anointed lords. This episode was edited by Esper Quinn, who can also edit your episode if you contact them on Twitter. If you'd like more people to hear the show, you can tell your friends about it, or rate and review us on whatever podcast service you use. You can add content to the Topic Bucket by emailing topicbucket@topiclords.com, and you can contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/topiclords. Patrons get episodes a week early, and you get access to the Topic Lords Discord, where you can discuss topics with all the lords that hang out in there. See you next episode!